Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and I just want to thank you for joining the Dr. Drew podcast and supporting the Corolla Pirate Ship here at the Corolla Network. And please, just a reminder, tell a friend about these podcasts. That is how this thing grows organically, and that is how we want this to grow. We want it to be a community of people that connect, and we talk about interesting things. And by the way, feel free to give us feedback and stuff, particularly for my show, that you'd like to hear. We'll be happy to set it up on the program. And again, tell a friend and keep this pirate ship afloat. Hey, it's time to show a little love to our friends at GoToMeeting. I think everyone knows that teamwork is a foundation for a successful business. That's why Adam and I use GoToMeeting with HD Faces by Citrix. What this is, I'm sure you've heard us talk about this before, but you have HD windows where you can actually see the people you're in the meeting with, and then you can throw the documents up on the same screen. Each other's documents, we can work on one another's documents. I set up a GoToMeeting today to work with a beverage gentleman that is known to Adam and his team to try to set up our recovery drink where we start working on these documents. We're trying to figure out exactly what the chemistry of each sort of liquid, each solution should be. And we throw them up there and we work on them. We work on the math a little bit. And then we can see each other and talk about what it is we intend to do in the progress across a meeting in terms of developing this product. So we have a contest that we want to propose to you all. If you could have a meeting with anyone living or dead, who would it be and why? Tweet us your answer with hashtag Dr. Drew, DRDRAW, webcam, and hashtag GoToMeeting, and we will look for a winner. The winners will get a new Logitech HD webcam to use with their GoToMeetings and some autographed photographs and swag from the show and more. I think I'd want to travel through time if I were going to have a GoToMeeting with anybody. But we'll include those kinds of things in the contest. It could be somebody living or dead, as we said. So we want you to GoToMeeting right now. Try for free 30 days. Just visit GoToMeeting.com. You click on the Try It Free button and use the promo code Drew. GoToMeeting, I guarantee you it is something that will be worth your while. Time to mention our friends at Audible.com. They, of course, are the internet's leading provider of audiobooks. They have more than 100,000 downloadable titles, including The Mirror Effect, my book on narcissism, and Adam's book, Not Taco Bell Material. I believe in like Fred Stoller's book, Maybe We'll Have You Back. I suggest you go get that book. It's very funny, very interesting look behind the scenes as a guest star on literally hundreds, it seems like, of different shows that he's been on. Good guy, good book. Check out his audiobook. Strangely enough, he's not the one reading it because they didn't feel he was Fred Stoller enough to actually pull off his own book. Again, there are all types of literature there, including audio versions of many of the New York Times bestsellers. For our listeners, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try them out. As I said, maybe you try that out with the Fred Stoller book. Maybe We'll Have You Back. For this free audiobook, go to audiblepodcast.com/Drew. Again, that is audiblepodcast.com/Drew.
This is Corolla Digital.
Hey, everybody, before we get into the body of the show here, I want to take a quick call from Mike. Mike, what's going on?
Hey, Dr. Drew. I'm all right, man, I guess. How are you?
Good. What can I do for you?
Well, honestly, because I respect your credentials, I just had a question about a situation with my son and his mom.
Okay.
It's really been a painful issue with there was some domestic problems, so I really took some initiative and backed away.
Okay.
And I, you know, I trusted her to, you know, to follow the court, the court orders with visitation, and she never has. Well, Dr. Drew, I went on the road and I worked on the road. You know, I kind of, like I said, I backed away when there was domestic issues on both sides, to be honest with you. So, but I, you know, I feel responsible, but you know, I'm not. It's a two-way street kind of thing, but. Mm-hmm. So I went on the road, and I worked in entertainment for like 10 years on the road. Well, Dr. Drew, I paid attorneys to see my son even when I had court-ordered visitation. And then I let her get away with, you know, with way too much. And I just, you know, but now I'm off the road. I got sick, you know, and then I left the road, and now I'm just adding it all up. You know, I'm sitting down, and I'm it's all, I'm 600 miles away. It's piling up, and she's still not letting me see him, and she's still violating court orders. You know, I just wanted to, I'm looking for a viewpoint, a good, you know, respectable viewpoint on this thing.
Well, Mike,
and some attacks.
Yeah. The court will normally protect a parental privilege, even if they have to supervise it themselves. If there's some complaint your wife has that you're not thinking about that really becomes meaningful from a legal standpoint, you still have right to to visitation. But this is a terribly complex situation. You're 600 miles away, you said. You're vaguely talking about being on the road. You vaguely talk about domestic violence. There would be need to be a somebody would have to sit for weeks with you to sort through this stuff to help you figure out what to do and what to do next. I mean, you need both somebody to support you from a mental health standpoint, and that could just be, frankly, could just be a friend, but somebody who really sits and sorts this stuff out with you, and a good attorney, so you know what your privileges are and how to assert them. As it is, from 600 miles away, I'm not sure you can do anything. You have to be in a different state, I suppose. And, I, you know, if you really are serious about childcare, you need to move closer to the kid, for one thing, right?
Yeah. I care for my elderly mom, though, right now, too. So
Again, this is why it would take weeks to sort through all this and to make decisions. And it sounds like you've let a lot of things drift, and you've sort of let it ride because you've been working or whatever, I understand.
But
are you taking any medication right now?
No.
Okay, good.
My health is really getting good. A lot better.
So it really, it's just, I mean, I wish, Mike, I could just have some sort of magical wand I could wave over this situation or some specific, you know, pearl of information that would cut through this like a knife. But there's no such thing. It's unrealistic. You need support. I don't care if it's a good friend or a therapist. And you need good legal representation. And then you need to make a whole series of decisions about your priorities, whether it's your mom's care, your own well-being, or being close to and participating in the life of this child. All those decisions need to be made, and they can't all be made in a single moment. And then each of them has to have a plan associated with it, and then you need to go execute those plans, and it sounds like it's going to need to be with an attorney. Thanks, Mike. I got to go. I got to go on to the rest of the show. Before I do, I want to give a shout-out to our friends at Lumosity. Lumosity.com. You've heard us talk about it. You can head on over there and do exercises. It gives you quick daily workouts for your brain. It certainly couldn't hurt. It's based on the science of neuroplasticity. They have breakthrough online games there at Lumosity.com. I do them. The some that I think are kind of favorites of mine that I do, frankly, before I go up and speak or before I get on the radio. It helps kind of makes you sharper, sharper in meetings, sharper with problem solving. Memory games are on this site as well, so it helps you with remembering things like names, which is something that really bugs me. Lumosity.com will give you the edge you need. I'm telling you, go there now. Support our friends at Lumosity. Click on the Start Training button, and you begin training for free. You have to tell them that Dr. Drew sent you. But head on over to Lumosity.com, start those training sessions, and not only do you gain an increasing edge through doing these repetitive games, but you actually get structured feedback. Because it's online, there's lots of information that comes back at you about improvement, about where you need to improve, and they structure each set of games specifically to where you'd like to focus your improved where you feel like you need improvement, they can focus the games in such a way that they can improve you in those specific areas. Lumosity.com. Start training for free now. Welcome back to the Dr. Drew Podcast. That's a little taste of the groovy tunes. You can get the swinging sounds of the Dr. Drew Podcast available now on iTunes. Chris Maxipata selected songs. We went through it and found some stuff we liked.
You selected them.
You gave me a choice. Yeah. A big, long menu of
stuff.
I just pointed
you in a direction.
You pointed me in a direction, and we like that direction. We want to come up with more for you guys, sort of different tones for different times of day, different sort of groovy experiences. social music, I call this. Don't forget, by the way, to support the pirate ship here at thecorolla.com by clicking through at drdrew.com. Again, if you click through on corolla.com, he doesn't think I'm doing my job. So you've got to click through on drdrew.com and support the pirate ship. Also, it's very important that those advertisers that support the pirate ship be supported as well. Thankfully, we actually really do. You hear us talk enthusiastically about people I go to meeting and stamps and Lumosity. These are actually people we are enthusiastic about and we use. It is my pleasure to welcome to the program today Miss Jenny Hutt, justjenny.com, J-E-N-N-Y. Twitter handle is at Jenny Hutt. Her radio show on Sirius XM is weekdays 6 to 7 a.m. Pacific time or 9 to 10 Eastern on Channel 106. And, of course, Jenny joins me very regularly on my HLN program. And Jenny and I, in recent weeks, have been doing all things Jody.
Yes, we have. Jody, hello.
I can't go a day without talking to you, Jenny.
Especially
not about Jody. So it's a podcast. We can talk about anything we want. But I have not talked about Jody at all on this podcast, and I thought I had to dedicate a little bit of time to it. We're going to have an episode with Adam Carolla's wife on here. I think Cheryl Arrett might well join us, and because Lynette Carolla is obsessed with all things Jody. If you ever notice, Jenny, you know, you and I get to see each other a little bit when we're off air. You know, we have screens, we can kind of watch each other. And I noticed you're texting and I'm texting. It's usually Lynette Carolla that's texting me during the show.
Freaking out about something?
Oh, my God. Tell Jenny. Tell Cheryl. This is so good. What's up with Mark?
Well, it's so interesting, Dr. Drew, and thank you for having me on your podcast, is that it's amazing sociologically the type of people who are obsessed with Jody Arias. It really runs the gamut.
Maybe we have time to really break this apart here a little bit. It's truly an obsession. It's a weird OCD thing. People get their teeth into it, and they can't stop.
Oh, no, they really can. I mean, I took my sister for a mammography today, and the doctor took me aside and said, oh, my God, I can't believe what's going on with the case.
What is the matter?
Literally.
What is the literally, matter with people?
Uh-huh. As we're walking out, she said, I don't understand. How could there be this hung jury? This is crazy.
How is that crazy? All right, let's start with that. How is it crazy that there was a hung jury? Nancy Grace last night. You see what I did with Nancy last night?
I didn't see what happened with Nancy. What did she think about it?
I got in a fight with Nancy last night.
Oh, my gosh.
She goes, how is this possible? What went wrong? And I went, I'm not sure anything went wrong. We knew this is one of the three potential outcomes. It was either going to be death, life, or hung. Right. Oh, something went terribly, terribly wrong. How could they, this horrible, murderous, why could they, you know, it's so simple to find a death penalty. And I said, Nancy, you're saying that the only viable outcome is death. That's what you're saying. Only viable outcome, death. And she's like, starts screaming at me that my FB must be broken because she never said anything like that.
Yeah. What I think is this. I think that it's, for me, ethically, morally, I'm a little conflicted about the death penalty.
Me too.
It's a tough thing for me to wrap my head around.
I'm a doctor, for God's sakes. I don't talk
about
killing
people. You took the Hippocratic Oath to help and care for people. So it's just sort of contraindicated for you to
But like the guy that, you know, burned that family up and tortured the kids.
Okay, I don't have a problem with
don't
it.
Don't have a
I
problem.
I would kill him.
No problem. I'd love to shoot the arrow into his head, whatever.
I feel the same
problem.
Way.
No problem. But somebody that, you know, had a, you know, just a horrible situation, it went bad, and she did horrible things, like, oh, God.
Listen, I think I understand the hesitation with someone like Jody Arias. She is a loathsome, disgusting character, yes. However, there's a lot of her, especially for women, that we can recognize in ourselves.
Right.
And I think that's part of the problem, that so many of us have felt sort of unhinged by somebody. We just don't take it to the level of slaughtering.
Well, let's talk about that.
Yeah.
So let's talk about women and their rages.
Women and their, I think it's more their attachments and their obsessive nature when it comes to men. And then, frankly, often the men who push every button. They push our buttons.
What are you talking about? We're just having sex.
I don't know. I think some of the time it's cognizant. I think some of the time the guys know what they're doing. And
no,
then other times.
There's no guys that know what they're doing. You give us way too much credit already. I don't even know what you're talking about.
You think so?
I don't even know what you're referring to, Jenny, and I already know you're giving us too much credit.
Okay, this is what I'm referring to. Here we have Jody and Travis, who had an on-again, off-again relationship. And when they initially broke it off, I think it was broken up. But then, because she kept coming at him, he took her back in, and he opened the door, and he made
it seem no games.
Like there was,
here's the game he was playing. Oh, the sex was good. I got to do that again. I can't stop. That's not a game. That's like saying somebody plays a game with chocolate almonds that I'm worried about, that Corolla keeps out here that I want to go eat.
Okay, but have you heard the concept of the thin skull case? It's a legal thing.
No, you're an attorney, so you tell me what that is.
Okay, you sort of take your victim as you find him. So in other words, he liked Jody, not realizing that she was as off the wall as she is.
Yes.
And so as he's thinking, oh, the sex is good, she's a nut job, however, I like having sex with her, he then got killed. Look, I don't think that's the way it should have been, obviously. And she goes above and beyond what a normal, rational, crazy girl does.
Well, but hang on, though. You said, though, it's his fault. Like, he was working her, pushing her buttons. He was just saying, oh, sex was good.
Well, I don't know that it's just sex is good, because he knew that she was much more engaged or involved with him than he was with her.
And so here's what guys do. They go, oh, my God, I shouldn't do this. I shouldn't do this. It's going to hurt her feelings. And then
they go, but I want to.
Right. That's not pushing buttons. That's them being unable to contain their impulses.
But don't you think there has to be some sort of responsibility?
Oh, no. Absolutely. No. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying it's okay.
Yeah.
But women talk about it as though men are like playing some sort of game or on a dance with the
women. But sometimes they are.
No.
Sometimes they say the right thing.
Yeah, to have sex.
The right thing. And again, let me just clarify, Dr. Drew, that I don't think that Travis deserved what happened to him.
No, I know. We're sort of using Travis as a springboard into conversations about men and women. And by the way, you don't have to worry so much about getting attacked here by the
I live in fear at this point.
Yeah, we in HLN, you say anything in any way, just thoughtful. Just try to look at what was that relationship like, or
right.
Jody, I bet she feels bad, or I wonder if Travis had any complicity here. The pitchforks and the torches come out immediately. So you can't. But here it's podcast. We've got the Corolla audience. They're a little more thoughtful, a little more reasonable. So we
listen,
can talk about
this is what I think with men. This is what I think. And with women. I think that women overanalyze everything. Every dynamic of every relationship.
No, that's been proven. Women we see it on brain scans, and we see it when we study their thinking. They're always analyzing thinking and overthinking everything.
Everything.
Yeah.
And you think men, it's just, it looks like a duck, it is a duck, and that's that?
Listen, women are the flight deck of a 747, and each plane is different. Men are a hamster in a wheel, period. Gentlemen, I've got two guys sitting across the window from me laughing their ass off. Give me the okay sign.
Explain to me.
Hang on. Hold on, Gary. Is there anything? Here's what's going on in that guy's mind, except I want to. It's like wanting to eat. I want to have sex. I want to eat. It's the same exact impulse. Yes?
Then explain to me the on-again, off-again relationship. Explain to me why the guy comes back for more with the most unrelenting, insufferable woman.
Not working out elsewhere.
Well, that right. He can't get anything else, or that sex was really good.
That's just nuts.
That's just men.
Maybe so, but that's the reality.
Or that sex was sex. And to be fair, how old are you guys? How old are you, Gary?
28.
And how old are you?
Oh, they're
27.
Babies.
27. Yeah, they are babies, but that's what I was going to say. Under 30,
yeah.
Men should be locked up. They're dangerous. They're under the influence of a drug. The drug is testosterone. And that's now, you are a woman, a grown woman, and you're talking about men going, how could this be possible? Because I deal with men and it's not like that. And you're right. When you hit past 30, men start becoming humans again and start engaging in relationships. But really, the vast majority of men, not all. By the way, I have faith the younger guys than you all are more sort of, I don't know. They seem less sexually preoccupied. There's a lot of that sexual preoccupation, but there's also an ability to have relationships and to take other people's point of view in a way I'm not accustomed to seeing in 18 to 25-year-olds. I'm seeing a little more of that these days.
Well, if you really believe that women are just misreading the signs or creating signs that don't exist, then that's a bigger issue all around. Because
Jenny, you and I was on your radio. I first met you on your radio show, 10 years ago, 8 years ago?
No, I can't.
That was my second time on. You keep talking about. I think I was on once before that a long time ago
with Alexis.
No, maybe it was 6 years ago.
I don't know.
Well, it feels like
I was with Alexis for a lot of years, and then I was by myself.
When did you had just started by yourself? When did that start?
That was only a year and a half ago. Pretty recent.
What? That was the first time.
Yes, and you were there. Yes,
wow,
you were in my studio talking about Nazima.
I felt like we had known each other from like 3 or 4 years
before
that.
Yes, we immediately got along.
Right, okay. But we had this conversation then, and I tried to straighten you out.
Yes, we did, because I don't believe it. I really think.
You know why you don't believe it?
I know too many women who are very smart, very educated, who have spent lives just being troubled over guys because they misread, misunderstood, they couldn't get it right, et cetera, going back for more. It's ugly.
Men are so simple.
So then I guess the question is, how do you tell women to deal with them? Because that should be your next book, Dr. Drew.
I've been preaching, and I've done a radio show for 30 years where I preach this.
I know, Love Lines. But there's got to be a book. There's got to be like a manual.
Let's do it together. We'll write it together. That's fine.
That's fine. I would like
to. We can publish it. We can put it right out here on DrDrew.com. We can e-book it, and we'll do it.
I think we should.
All right, let's do it.
There's really got to be a message to women.
Done. We'll call it a love letter to women. Message to women.
Okay, I like that plan.
But here's my feeling about it. I believe that the resistance comes from two places. One is it's so different than how your guys' brains work, and it's like hard to get your head around that kind of unidirectional, unidimensional kind of thinking, because you guys think in many dimensions at once, and we don't. We think linear, and our body and our motivation is all very linear, and you know, kill, eat, reproduce. It's very very simple kinds of stuff. Again, until 30. We re-enter humanity at 30. This is not to disparage men or bash men by any means. It's just a fact, just how we were. But the other thing is, on some level, I think, and I don't know this because I'm not a woman, but my guess is women, they start to deal with this. They start to look at it realistically, and then it occurs to them, well, Dad's a man. Oh, no. No, 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 no. He couldn't
have been. I never even thought like that.
He can't be. He couldn't be. That's too okay, we're not going there. So now I'm back to thinking, what could he be thinking? What could he be dreaming? Blah, blah, blah. He's not like me. Blah, blah, blah.
Interesting. I don't think of it like I never thought of my father as anything more than, thankfully, as anything
more
than my dad.
But I think it's so deep and so profound that's what keeps you from going there.
But I think it would change my life if I could just look at men the way you're saying they really are.
First of all, you have a great.
Here's a conflict. How do men then love forever?
Well, they pass the age of 30. they make it successfully past the age of 30.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, and then they reengage like everybody else does. They're able to have really. And by the way, you have a fantastic husband. I love him.
My husband's such a good guy.
Yeah. And so clearly you figured it out, right? So don't tell me you didn't figure it out. You did. But
No. I did figure it out for me, but it took a lot. Listen, it took a lot of work, and it took a lot of getting outside myself, actually.
And kissing some frogs.
Yeah. I mean, I look back on that year, and it was the 1 year of my life that I took antidepressants. And I say to my husband, I'm a bait and switch.
You got a good one in return?
I was the bait and switch, the poor guy, because I was on 20 milligrams of Prozac for 12 months of my life at age 25.
That makes you not want to have sex.
No, I wanted to have sex. Thankfully, it didn't hurt my sex drive, but I wasn't nutty. I wasn't like worried when he was going to call.
I see.
I wasn't obsessive.
Then
I
you
was
got nutty.
Cool.
Then you got nutty.
Yeah, it was like divine intervention mixed with Prozac.
Okay, wait. I wanted to answer an important question. What was it before we got to your husband and how we got to make women understand this and how do men reengage?
How do you know that he loves you?
So men have
forever.
To be. I think men need to be involved, invested in a visceral way in their female partners. There has to be some passionate something that, and women need this too. I mean, this shouldn't
of
be a
course.
Surprise. Yeah. But men, they got to have that. They got to have that, and it's got to be there. And they also have to have sort of done their business. You know what I mean? They have to finish screwing around or whatever they needed to do. They really have to be in a certain place in their life. And women do a lot of worrying about how do I become that person? How do I become that person? No, it's much more important that you get the guy at the right time. Because he must know who he is in the world. He must have his career sort of set in his head at least. He must feel like he can, you know, he understands himself in the world. Like he's
But do you think that then will stave off the midlife crisis that many men go through?
Absolutely, it will. Absolutely. If men screw around enough when they're younger and wait until they understand who they are in the world, so they – because men will go, well, geez, now I've got money and just prestige, and I could date that girl that I always wanted.
Oh, you mean have sex with enough girls. I do believe that. I do believe that you have to be with a guy.
It's not even as simple as having sex with enough girls. For some guys, it is that. But it's more about I've done what I need to do so it doesn't bother me 20 years later. So I don't keep thinking, well, God, why didn't I do that? Or I got money and position. I could do that. And God, you know, it's got to be out of your system. It's got to be done. And it's important. I think that's important.
I think that is important. But you believe that they attach and they love.
Yes.
In the same way, ultimately, that women can.
100%. It's just you. Mm-hmm. Oh, I know what I was going to tell you, which is that there's a very famous biological anthropologist at Rutgers University. His name is Lionel Tiger. I think he wrote a book called The Descent of Man or something. Not The Descent of Man. That's
I want to know if right Descent of the Man is before or after he showered.
No, Descent of Man is by Darwin. This is like the it's basically meant the sort of the peripheralization of man. What's okay. Lionel Tiger, what's it called?
The Decline of Man.
Decline of Man. Decline of the
okay.
Male.
Decline very of different. Male. All right.
Yeah, and Descent of Man. Decline of the Male. And I had great chance to talk to him one time on a television program. And in fact, we need to get him in here. He's so old now, but try to book him for the podcast. He'd be fascinating to talk to. And he said one thing, the one generalization he could categorically make about men and women after a lifetime of studying biological anthropology is that throughout human history, women have tamed men. Throughout mm-hmm. human history, women have tamed men. Meaning, and I knew exactly what he meant, that you women are a better version of the human being and you bring us into our humanity. You get us past that testosterone-driven aggression, sexual ridiculous acting out, back to our self, back to
Go ahead. Don't you think it's sort of an evolutionary thing?
Of course.
Sort of an
everything
necessity
is.
Thing? Yeah.
Well, everything is. I mean, well, when what's the evolution of necessity? Form a stable family unit
so
you can successfully raise children, you know, in a healthy, productive way. And that's the evolutionary – it's called the – you know, this developed in what's called the environment of evolutionary adaptedness, the EEA. And that's, you know, that's how we evolved. That's what we got now. And we should not be resisting or trying to change. We should not succumb to our biology, but we should.
Right. Well, see, there, right there, what you're saying right there is part of the big issue, though, because if men are wired to just essentially say yes when their body tells them to.
No. Men are wired with uncontrollable drives. Mm-hmm. Unmanageable. In fact, Jenny, the one thing I love is when I talk to female to male transsexuals, like Chastity Bono, Chaz Bono.
Yes, yes.
The one thing they will tell you is that as soon as they get on the high levels of testosterone, the male levels of testosterone, they immediately, I've talked to dozens of them that tell me the same thing, they immediately become sympathetic with men. They will go,
they understand.
They go, oh, my God, you've been dealing with this? This is what you feel like every day? Holy crap. And then you go, yeah, since I was 13, how'd you like to deal with this as a 13-year-old? And they're like, oh, my God, how do you survive?
Okay.
How do you deal with that?
I'm going to give you another example of the game playing that you say doesn't exist on the male side.
Okay.
Okay. So the guy and the girl, they break up.
Yep.
It is over. It
yep.
is done with.
Yep.
3 months later, and the guy has broke up with the girl. 3 months later, why is the guy calling the girl again and saying exactly what she needs to hear?
Gentlemen, do you hear what she asked? There's a three-letter word.
Sex. But that's a game. He knows what he's doing. He's calculated it. He knows if he says the right thing, she'll agree to it.
No, that's literally like saying he's playing a game with Taco Bell when he walks into the when he waits in line. He knows that if he waits in line at the Taco Bell, eventually he's going to get a burrito. And so if you don't know that's what he's doing, that's on you. If you don't want to serve him the
this
Dorito,
is great advice. We have to write this book. It's going to save. It'll save my adorable, almost 13-year-old daughter years
no
of pain.
Sense in trying to deprogram young guys.
Just like you can't
beat the young girls. It's your only shot.
The only chance. Yeah, the only chance. To
I don't
the
want
girls.
To deprogram the men. I want to teach the girls.
Yeah.
I want to help the girls.
Yeah. So the guy is now. To be fair, with there's nuances to this because within those guys that are so driven and whatnot, there's a group of love addicted guys. They're guys
okay.
that are abandoned and wounded and stuff. And they're still in that same motivational state, but once they get in with the girl, they get in too deep and they get clingy and they can't let go. Now,
that's gross. By the way, that's so unappealing.
But by the way,
so many
that's
levels.
The one guy you should stick with. That's the only guy that you should be around when you're
the
a young
guy
woman.
That you should be around.
No,
the
every other guy is full of shit.
Hold on.
Now, I'm not saying the guy is good for you because he's got love addiction and stuff too, but I'm just saying that's the only guy that won't be motivated by other things. Anybody disagree with me, gentlemen? To the little
nope.
panel here?
Now we're full of shit.
No. Hold on a minute. I think somewhere between the guy who loves you forever and is devoted and in love with loving you and loves you and the guy who's like so whipped it's gross and annoying is
yeah.
where we want to be.
No, of course.
I don't want to be with a guy who I don't know what kind of language you use on this show.
Any kind.
Huh?
All kinds.
I don't want a guy who's a pussy.
Yeah. Oh, you can't say pussy on this show, Jenny. How dare you? No, of course you use any language.
But I don't want that. I want a strong guy.
Yeah,
I
understand
a strong
that.
Guy
but what I'm telling can... you, what I'm telling yeah. you is, and by the way, I was kind of that love addicted teenager, by the way, and they grow up to be okay. You know what I'm saying? And not to say that it was a good thing to be around me when I should have been locked
right,
up too.
Right, you figured
I was 30.
It out, right?
Well, I should have been locked up too when I was 30. But they're the only guys that aren't solely motivated by the testosterone.
Okay.
You know, the
because
rest of
them have more substance.
No, they don't have more substance. They have they're wounded. They're wounded. But you guys don't like to be around wounded guys, particularly when you're younger.
No. I want to be around a guy who has an emotional life, though. I couldn't have ended
well,
up
then
with
you
somebody
better stop.
Who felt nothing.
Then look, a guy has to be over 30. Has to be.
Right. Well, my husband and I got married. He was 30.
Okay, perfect.
But we met. He was 28 and a half. 28.
And again, we're a lot of this is polemic.
We're generalizing.
We're sweeping generalizations.
Of course,
But these are notions that people sort of don't get. Even you don't get.
So, but now you're clearing it up because what you're saying is that Jody getting crazy over Travis Alexander was a useless waste of her time because he wasn't, and also misguided because he wasn't purposely trying to make her nuts. He just made her nuts because the sex was good.
Here's the worst part of it. And this is the part that makes guys not be able to look away. And this is what makes Kobe Bryant call me to talk about Jody Arias, which is the guy thinks – by the way, we've been exchanging a little stuff again. my staff's very excited about that.
It's exciting.
He's healing fine, by the way. He's doing good.
Good.
We as the guy think – now we start thinking like – that she must be thinking like us. She seemed so into the sex, she must be coming back for the sex the way I am. You understand?
It's an ego boost.
Forget the ego boost. He thinks she's really into it, that she can't resist.
Yes,
forget the fact
that, and that's an ego boost for him.
Well, of course.
He feels like big man on campus.
Yeah, forget big man on campus. You're missing the point. He never occurs to him that she's experiencing something different. He thinks she's lined up in Taco Bell, too.
Oh, see, and I look at it differently. I look at it like he feels so good about himself.
Well, he does. That's part of it, too. He's like, hey, it's me, man. It's of course she's like that. But I've got the burritos. I got the burritos. So let's line up. Let's line up, everybody.
So he thinks it's really a consensual relationship, even on a mental level.
Motivated out of the same drive for sex. Because you listen to her sex tapes. That's why all the guys are like, holy shit, she wasn't. That's her not into it?
By the way, my God.
I
thought those sex tapes were incredibly lame. I'm just going to put that out there.
Well, they were not. Yeah, they were not great. But they both are kind of lame. But they were lame in the same way, which was interesting.
Right. They were immature.
Yeah.
They seem like kids.
But
it's weird.
Yeah, it was weird. But that's the point. The guys listen to that going, oh, yeah, she wants it. She's speaking as though that crazy stuff is really turning her on, and it really isn't.
Right.
How does that work?
Right. Didn't know that. Right.
So guys are – the yuggity 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 is right there for men.
Okay. So how about this part, though? Because I know that you've seen this before, certainly in your line of work and doing love lines and in being a medical doctor and in just dealing with as many people as you've dealt with. Why is it then that when the relationship breaks up, very often we see the girl go crazy? This isn't the first story. It's not typical that she kills, but it's not the first story or not atypical for a girl to get nutty and think, oh, my God, he doesn't want to go out with me anymore. I'm going to get him to go out with me again. I'm not taking no for an answer. That's a very female
response. This is what I want to talk about. When men do it, it's because they're love addicted. They can't let go. They're pussies. I don't know why women do it. Why do women do it? And by the way, and this is the other thing I want to talk about, is why is rage tied up in it?
Because when
men are left behind, they get hurt. They don't get angry. Angry is like, huh? Why are you angry? You fucked up or she doesn't like you anymore. That hurts. That's not anger. Is that just pain causing anger or what is that?
Well, Dr. Drew, I think that anger is usually the top level of the sadness. I think that anger comes first because the pain of the sadness is so big that very often, I guess the woman can't handle the feeling that's so icky underneath, that's so brutal underneath. And the rage makes us not have to look at the real sad part of it or what makes us sad about it. If he doesn't want me anymore, then either there's something wrong with me or there's something wrong with him. And I'm going to make it that there's something wrong with him because having to feel like there's something wrong with me is too much to take. Now, it shouldn't be any of that.
There is something wrong with him. He's not into you anymore.
Exactly.
What's wrong with that?
It's ridiculous. But the healthy mind, but it comes from insecurity. It comes from I don't want to deal with the fact that he doesn't want me anymore.
So why don't men get rage?
Sometimes they do. Men have been known to kill women. But I
no,
think
they get, they want to kill if one of her planes has been violated by another man.
Yes, that's not
that's
okay.
That's when they want to kill.
Yes,
before
no, that,
that
is not.
Yeah, they don't want to kill. They're just, they feel bad. They get crazy and they lurk and they can stalk and things like that. But they,
and they
not,
feel sad inside, but they don't get rageful like we do. I've seen it time and time again. I mean, in my 20s, I remember being just, I can recall it like it was yesterday. It was awful. It was awful.
Why the rage? Rage sounds better than the sadness we deal with.
Why rage? I've not really deconstructed the rage other than I think there's a spoiled nature to it. I think there's probably an immaturity.
Is that why everyone's so mad at Jodi Arias? Because she took that rage and acted it out?
Yeah, well, I think that's part of it because it's inconceivable that someone would do that. I mean, the way
forget what she did. Forget what she did. That she became violent with her rage.
Yeah, it's just well, that angers me because that's so not. I think most women have experienced rageful moments in their lives, whether it's with a romantic relationship, with their children, and there seems to be this very fine line between those who act out and those who don't. We've all had the feelings like our kids make us go ballistic. They make us insane. But we don't hurt our children.
But
you walk out of the room. You call your spouse.
About it.
You call your best friend.
Well, people fantasize about it, and kids do get abused.
Which is sick and twisted and awful. So I could never.
Okay, we got to take a break.
Never, I can't even
hold that thought.
Think of that.
Got to take a quick break. Jenny Hutt, at Jenny Hutt is the website, is the Twitter handle, by the way. Weekday 6 to 7 Pacific, 9 to 10 Eastern, Channel 106, Sirius XM Radio. Be right back with Jenny Hutt. Time to mention our friends at Audible.com. They, of course, are the Internet's leading provider of audiobooks. They have more than 100,000 downloadable titles, including The Mirror Effect, my book on narcissism, and Adam's book, Not Talk Well Material. I believe in, like, Fred Stoller's book, Maybe We'll Have You Back. I suggest you go get that book. It's very funny, very interesting look behind the scenes as a guest star on literally hundreds, it seems like, of different shows that he's been on. Good guy, good book. Check out his audiobook. Strangely enough, he's not the one reading it because they didn't feel he was Fred Stoller enough to actually pull off his own book. Again, there are all types of literature there, including audio versions of many of the New York Times bestsellers. For our listeners, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try them out. As I said, maybe you try that out with the Fred Stoller book. Maybe we'll have you back. For this free audiobook, go to audiblepodcast.com/Drew. Again, that is audiblepodcast.com/Drew. Dr. Drew Podcast, again, a taste of the groovy tunes of that you can get on iTunes. It's just called the Swingin' Sounds Dr. Drew Podcast.
The Swingin'
right?
Sound of the Dr. Drew Podcast.
And is it available at drdrew.com?
drdrew.com/music for more info on track listing.
Also, based on some of the stuff that Jenny and I are talking about, you may want to check out Women Who Love Too Much or Facing Love Addiction.
Who Love Too Much is the oldest book. I love that book. It's from when I was in my 20s, I feel like, and my best friend and I had that book.
It's a good book, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yep.
And Facing Love Addiction is sort of the graduate. You graduate to that once you hear the stories. It gives you a deeper understanding of how this all constructed. And that's kind of what we're talking about tonight, but we're also talking about – and by the way, that Decline of Man is male is a good book. Might as well put that up
there,
too.
We'll be linking to all those books on the episode page.
All right, fair enough. So we were talking about the rage. We were talking about the crazy. We were talking about Jodi Arias.
Why people are obsessed.
Yeah, why they're obsessed with her. And it's still
it's also because she's pretty. I mean, you have to realize that we live in a very shallow, looks-obsessed society.
And Jane, one of the shows you and I were doing, started screaming about that. I think you were on that panel.
Yeah, she was 100% correct. I mean, there's something about beauty that ignites extra agitation and extra sort of a need to look. We like pretty things. And if you look at Jodi Arias, yes, right now she looks rather downtrodden, but she's symmetrical and she's slight and she's got breasts. She's got the look that people like.
Symmetrical, slight, and breasts. Gentlemen, that about sum it up for you? You see how unidimensional men are, Jenny? That's about it. That's all they need.
Mm-hmm. Kind of
and full lips. And full lips. Let's add to that. Yeah.
All right. So, you know, you talk a lot to women in your show, right?
I do.
And what kinds of things are they mostly complaining about these days?
Well, I do hear a lot of dating issues. I hear about body issues. I hear about
the body
parenting.
The body thing makes me very sad. That is just it's just unfair that women have to feel that way about their bodies. It's very sad to me.
Well, I think it is sad, but it's the reality of our culture. And bodies come in all different shapes and sizes, but it seems that only certain ones are really deemed acceptable.
Mm-hmm. I have a feeling, my sense, and by the way, men obviously contribute to that immensely, but my deepest instinct is that men have a kind of a window from about 12 to 15, guys back me up on this, when what they look at in terms of sexual material that gets them going early in their puberty becomes preferential. And the more intense and the more, let's just call it intense, the material they see is the more preferential it becomes.
Right.
And so, you know, when I was a kid, Playboy, I was like, oh, that's your image of woman. Oh, woman must have.
Right. You sort of figure out what your type is in a way.
Well, but I think it figures it out with you. I mean, like it's a feedback. Yes, you have what you're sort of, maybe it's a genetic predilection or something driven towards, but then the culture and the images that these kids are exposed to really solidifies it. And because they're of a certain type and a certain symmetry and a certain perfection, and now with pornography, I think it's getting ridiculous.
Yeah, it is. It's a little bit scary. I have to explain to my kids and certainly to my son that what he might come across on the internet isn't what really is going to happen.
Well, that may be a really good thing to talk about. Maybe by discussing it and opening to, you know, what his body's doing and how he's – I don't know if there's an intellectual way to get at that because it is so primitive.
Yeah, well, I think that just making – kids know that it's okay to have feelings and to look and to be curious, I think is very healthy. To think that a kid is going to be prevented from looking online for sex, it's ridiculous.
It's unrealistic.
Porn is everywhere you turn.
Yeah, it's unrealistic.
So it's unrealistic, and I also think it's incredibly naive of a parent to think that he or she could really just stop it from happening.
Jenny, let's take some calls, shall we?
Sure.
All right, and I see mostly Jody Arias calls up there. This is Michelle. Michelle, what's up?
Hi, Dr. Drew. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I just have a question for you. How do you think the jurors are going to feel once they're able to see all the things that they were unable to see during the trial?
Michelle, the thing that I noticed, juror number 8, the guy we did talk to that was kicked out of the jury a couple weeks ago, the thing he responded to most powerfully were the interrogation tapes. That floored him. Did you think so, Jenny?
I think that floored him, but I also think that the prosecution did put on a really solid case. I think they did a really great job.
So you don't think they missed much?
I do not think they missed much because I did not I saw the interrogation tapes and I got to see some interviews that the jury didn't get to see. But really watching the trial itself helped me form my opinion ultimately.
Michelle, were you thinking of anything in particular?
Well, I mean, the interrogation tapes, absolutely. But, like, for example, the latest interviews.
Oh, yeah. Well, you're right. The latest stuff.
Things that, you know, they were just not privy to.
The latest interviews turned me. They turned me.
They turned a lot of us.
Yeah, I was like, oh, gee, that's right. She is that sick. Oh.
And, of course, a lot of the journals that they weren't able to hear.
In a way, if you go back to the interviews, the recent ones, the thing with those was I kind of watched them, and I think I said this on your show, Dr. Drew, that she seemed childlike, she seemed like she was having a good time, and she seemed really mentally ill.
Yeah.
And that in a way didn't give me compassion because, again, I think she's just horrible. But it didn't make me feel like it was just about being evil.
Well, maybe we should have a separate show on just have a talk about what evil is, because that's a hard thing to get our head around. But
well, my personal opinion is I think they're going to be pretty shocked when they do see some of the things that they were unable to see or hear.
Yeah, it might sway them a little bit. And now, Michelle, let me switch this on you a little bit and ask, we've been sort of talking about what is so obsessive about this trial. What is it for you?
Well, actually, my background is I'm a mental health social worker. And so right in the very beginning, I didn't see the first part. But once I got into it, and actually I did diagnose her with borderline personality.
Yeah, we all got that early.
As well as sociopathic behavior.
Well, that's the thing, though. But And the borderline stuff, I think anyone that works in mental health kind of sees right away. Or you actually feel it. All the spin cycle everyone goes into with it. But the psychopathic stuff is a little tougher to come upon, in that it only happened in a context of what she did. In other words, there's not a long history of what we think of as psychopathic behavior, right?
Well, no, true, but I think maybe there were things that were going on, you know, that were just kind of ignored, not seen. I mean, the borderline personality disorder was pretty evident.
Yeah, for sure.
And unfortunately, she was not diagnosed, and I don't believe that she ever had therapy. So
no.
But unfortunately, fortunately, most borderline personality people or people suffering from borderline personality disorder don't kill.
No, that's the point. It's unfair to put them in the same category.
Right.
But they do crazy stuff. They can be you know driven to crazy stuff. Not like this. Not this kind of brutality.
No, this was excessive.
And that's what. And then the cover up and all is the psychopathic piece. And that's
exactly.
That's what's weird. Really weird about trying to understand what this was. You know, it's hard. It's not the usual. I think there's something neurobiologically, developmentally going on here too.
Very possible, and they really won't know unless you know they did some studies.
Right.
Unless they get
such,
to cut open her brain.
Some psych testing, some functional MRI scans. Thanks, Michelle. Appreciate the question.
Thank you so much.
You betcha. Let's talk to Karen, who's thinking along those same lines. Karen, what's up?
Hey, I just wanted to know why you think that we're so glued to the TV and into this case. It seems like our lives have revolved around what's happening.
It's uniquely women that are doing so. I mean, this so intensely. Men are kind of intrigued, but women are obsessed.
Listen, I'm telling you, Dr. Drew, I have from my website the comments of people when I wrote a blog post about why we're obsessed with Jody were outstanding. Every girl had a story about a guy she was addicted to, crazy over, how she drove by his house, how she pretended she was
Jennifer,
pregnant.
Let me interrupt and say, why doesn't then that give them compassion for her? Why aren't they mad at Travis?
I'll tell you why. Because all of us, we did the right thing and got over it. We matured. We dealt with it. We did what we had to do. We didn't kill anybody.
Is there some sort of, I've got an interesting question here. Karen, I'm glad you're on the line for this. Is there some sort, you know, women create culture and community. Mm-hmm. Some woman's code that she has violated by acting on her rage? But this is, men don't understand. I don't know what that code is.
The code is, it's okay to freak out over a guy. We all do it. But we talk to each other, and we deal with it. Dealing with it might mean eating pints of ice cream and crying for weeks at a time.
Now, hold on. So wait. So you're saying deal with it by acting in as opposed to acting out?
Meaning acting out at him. You can act out if it's in a helpful manner.
But acting in, cutting, overeating, whatever, drinking.
I mean,
well, that's what people do. They cut.
No. I'm not recommending. No. That would not be what anyone would want. But I do think that to go after a guy because he doesn't want to be with you anymore it's psychotic behavior.
No, I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm trying to understand the woman's code. Karen, you get the point I'm trying to drill into?
I see what you're saying. I understand the woman's code. But it's so weird about this case. I don't know. It's like you get home from work and that's what you turn on. Is you're just so focused into what's going on.
I think it has become a reality show.
Right. You know, that could be.
Yeah, it really has become a reality show. It's become a reality show with a sort of a after buzz components, right, where people sit and talk about it.
Right.
It's almost, you know, Real Housewives-ish in a weird way.
When the result came yesterday, I mean, I was crying. The whole nation seemed to be crying about the whole thing.
Well, I think that's the other side of it. I think that like Dr. Drew, has taken an enormous
risk.
No, I think that the way you care about the Alexander family,
I think
collectively, we all do. It's heartbreaking.
Yeah,
we look at this family, and it sort of takes all our sadness, and it goes there. I think there's probably some displaced emotion that people are displaying. And I also think there's some real compassion
why am I wanting to go to? You made a good effort, guys. Well done. She's suffering. You got the murder one. Just stop. Just enough. We couldn't get the death penalty. Couldn't quite get in the end zone, but you kicked the field goal. and you win the game. Fine. Let's just leave her in jail to rot somewhere. Why can't the family do that? To me, it's like, or why can't we all do that or all feel like they should do that? Because,
well, I understand why the family can't.
No, I understand why they can't, but why they don't really want to. But it's better for them if they just,
get on with your life. Because that's your healthy distance from it.
Yeah.
They're so entrenched. It's a part of them. So in their minds, even though psychologically, like Cheryl Root said the other day, people who watch Lethal Injections have a hard time resulting.
Yeah, it doesn't help them. Yeah.
Right. So, but this family, and I get it, is thinking if we watch her die, it'll give us some peace.
It doesn't happen like that.
That's just what they're thinking.
Yeah. What do you think, Karen?
I agree to a point. You know, I think even I have compassion for the Alexander family. And then on the other side, you kind of feel sorry for her that she never could get over Travis. I mean, it seems like
she's sick. She's ill.
Yeah, and she, you know what they say, you know, she's not going to suffer in prison because she doesn't, I don't think, understand what she's going through.
I don't think I think she will suffer in prison. Because the thing about borderlines is they get better as they get older. And she may one day gain some insight and go, holy shit, what have I done? And may even be able to say sorry someday.
And, hopefully.
But in the meantime,
I hope she never gets out. I mean, I don't think this is somebody who should ever
be paroled. No, she shouldn't get out. She shouldn't have a satisfying life. But this whole business of her, that business of her appealing to the jury to give her a satisfying life of service, I think is awful.
I don't even know what she was talking about. I mean, watching that was so unbelievably maddening. She's pretty good with drawing hands.
T-shirts.
Yeah, making T-shirts and drawing hands.
Weird. All right, Karen, thanks for the call.
All right, thank you.
You bet. And this is Megan. Megan, what's up?
Hi.
Hey, Megan.
So excited I'm actually talking to you.
Here we are.
I'm a big fan.
You're also on Jenny Hunt.
Hello.
I wanted to ask, do you think that for the next, if they do decide to go to trial for the next the phase to retry it, if it would be helpful and they might actually go, if her new defense were to actually take her to a psychologist and diagnose her with something and then come back and then use that for their benefit for life?
I don't know that they'll be able to do that.
Well,
Jenny's
an attorney, so perfect that you asked this question of her. So go ahead, Jenny.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to allow things into evidence that might change what the outcome of the case was. Because what the important thing, which Dr. Drew said earlier, is that she was convicted of premeditated murder, of murder one. So they got that. This is purely to decide whether or not she should be given death. So they're going to show certain, the prosecution's job is to show that she's so heinous that the only remedy is death. And the defense is going to show all the mitigating factors
But why not take a mitigating factor is she's nuts.
I don't know that they can, I don't know that a judge would allow into evidence
something new.
Like a psychological analysis.
Well, what if they took DeMarte stuff and said, let me explain to you what borderline personality disorder is?
They might be able to do that. If it's already been admitted into evidence, then it can be used.
And Megan, understand this would not be insanity because she does definitely know the difference between right and wrong. It would be
at the time she committed the crime.
Yeah, it would
That's the thing about the insanity defense. It's in the moment of the crime's commission. Does a person have the presence of mind to know what they're doing is wrong?
See, I don't think they can get into that because she was in a fog. So how
could
they?
She was in a fog. So the fog is definitely
a
problem.
True.
Yeah. So
it's so funny because I went to school with a girl that reminded me so much of her.
Yeah.
And then we found out that she got arrested recently for accessory to murder.
No.
It's just so funny.
Well, funny.
Because they were both pathological liars and everything. And just,
was she able to have boyfriends and did she have friends and stuff?
Actually, she was the odd person out in our theater department, and she was very possessive with the guys that she dated.
There you go.
And it was actually her fiancé murdered two people, and immediately when we heard that, we all knew that she had something to do with it because she was just cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs.
Well, but these kinds of people can also become so enmeshed with somebody, they would be the kind of person that would adopt, just the way Jody went and did the converted to Mormonism.
Mm-hmm.
They could also be the person that colludes in a crime or colludes in a murder.
Right. Did you notice in her recent interview, Dr. Drew, that she said she's no longer religious?
Just
a bit spiritual?
Well, yeah, but she's sort of – that was so weird. Everything's so weird. Those interviews were so bizarre. I love the way – what was the thing that I confronted that interviewer about last night, the other night? She gave some – oh, why she stood on her head. They asked her why she stood on her head. She goes, well,
carpet.
It was going to be the last time I was going to see carpet, so I wanted to get down and feel it.
Unbelievable.
And I would have said, okay, stop the bullshit. What the hell were you doing on your head? Stop it. I'm not going to stop asking this question until you answer my goddamn question.
Yeah. Well, that's why I loved the reporter from, I think it was, maybe it was Good Morning America that had run it. This one reporter who went at her and she called him a hater.
I know.
When I booked this interview, I didn't know you were a hater.
But he did it in a not the way to manage a person like this. You've got to come in the back door a little bit.
Sure, you got to make her think you love her.
Well, or not love her, but you got to either go, come on, stop it.
Yeah.
You got to go, come on.
She has such a weird immaturity to her. It's like she's a little rotten teenage girl that didn't get her way, and she just.
Right, this stunted, spoiled 16-year-old.
It's a piece of it.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do probably the next episode will be with Dr. Alan Shore, and I'm going to ask him a little bit about her facial expressions and her neurobiological development. If you watch the episode that I interviewed with Stephen Porges, if you really are interested in what that biology is, Gary's going to tell me what episode that was. He talks about the vagus nerve and how this stuff develops and how the face is tied into our emotional processes, and people that don't have that are disconnected from their emotions. Episode 62 with Stephen Porges.
Wow. As opposed to someone like me whose face constantly moves.
Yeah, yeah.
Botox has very little impact on me. It's true.
You funny you would say that. I get to see little satellite feeds and all my guests at HLN, and I was watching Jenny last night admiring your connectedness. I was actually having that conversation with someone. Jenny is connected. And look at her face. Look how expressive. Stop it. You're moaning.
I am, because I'm such an emotional person that I'm like you in that way. I'm compassionate. I feel everything. I'm like CeCe Bloom in Beaches. It's awful.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for the call, Megan. We're going to move on, okay?
Thank you. Nice talking to you.
And Jenny, I actually have to move on from you, too. I've run out of time. Isn't this fun, do podcast? Oh, where is she?
I can't believe how much you work, Dr. Drew. It's really, you don't stop.
I like to work. I like my work, and I'm grateful that I get to do stuff that makes a difference, I hope. And that it's,
you do make a difference.
My job is only to try to do good and create avenues where we can do more of that actually interest people. But, Jenny, thank you so much, and thank you for always being a part of the HLN program, too. You become an important part of our family, and it's weird that both our executive producer, Bert Dubrow, and I have had a previous life with you in other areas. And it's weird to me, but here we are all together again.
Yeah, it's good. I like it.
All right.
Thank you very much for having me on the show.
And if you do come out here again, come into the studio, do the podcast here, okay?
Of course, yeah. I'll let you know. Thanks.
Okay.
I'll see you on the air. Goodbye.
You will indeed. Jenny Hudd is weekdays, 6 to 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 Eastern, SiriusXM Radio Show, Channel 106, at Jenny Hutt, JennyHutt is the Twitter handle. Her website is just Jenny, JennyHutt.com. And thank you, Jenny Hutt. Thank you all for listening. We'll see you next time.
Corolla Digital.